when the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, if any of you have kids who enjoy Minecraft, they may be well-versed in different kinds of stones and items to make buildings. I may be one of those parents, but what I'm not so well-versed in is the abandoned building that we're looking at today. Gordon Goldsborough is here to tell us more. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadia. Yeah.
Remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, I pointed out that our provincial legislative building here in Winnipeg is made of Tindalstone, and we would be looking at another building made of Tindalstone, but this one would be abandoned.
So what are we talking about?
Well, let's first define our terms. So people might not know what Tindalstone is. It's actually a form of limestone, a very soft sedimentary rock. It's known for its large fossils. And of course, anybody who's visited the legislature knows that there's some really magnificent fossils on the walls of inside the building. It's a registered trademark, Tindalstone is, of the Gillis Quarries here in Manitoba. And they have quarried stone at their facility at Garson, which is about 2 miles west of the village of Tindal.
Why is it called Tindalstone then if it's quarried at Garson?
Well, there's the story. So in the past, the village of Tindal was served by the Canadian Pacific Railway. Garson was not. So it meant that shipments of stone by rail had to be sent from Tindal. And so the shipping documents would say, you know, Tindal as the shipping point, and people would naturally assume that that's where the stone came from. So they began talking about the stone from Tindal, and the name kind of stuck. But, you know, it strikes me that it's a very long-term injustice. It really should have been called Garson Stone.
And we are correcting the injustice right here this
morning. Setting the historical record straight.
We are. That's what we do. That's how we roll. How long has a quarry operated at Garson?
Well, it's generally believed that the limestone was first discovered at Garson when a local farmer was digging a well, and not very far down, he encountered an impenetrable layer of stone, so he couldn't build his well. And so the first commercial stone quarry was established in the 1890s. So it's over 100 years ago. The first large-scale commercial quarry, though, dates to either the late 1890s or the early 1900s. The historical record's a little unclear on that, but it basically started when a fellow named William Garson arrived. And of course, Garson, there's the basis for the name of the town. Incidentally, William Garson is actually the father of Stuart Garson, and historians know that that's, of course, one of the former premiers of Manitoba. So the premier of Manitoba has a connection to this whole stone story. Garson, I have to say, died abruptly in 1911. His quarry was purchased by a building contractor here in Winnipeg named Peter Lyle. And he's the one, I think, that figures most prominently into our story, because he's the one that really grows it into a very big quarry operation. And in fact, by 1914, there were actually three quarries at Garson. The largest one was run by Peter Lyle, and it employed 250 men. And basically the idea was they would cut big blocks of stone from the ground, lift them out, haul them into a mill that was nearby, and in the mill they would cut the stone into smaller pieces. And of course, sometimes architects will prescribe that they need to be shaped in a certain way, have certain dimensions, and it's the mill where they do all this cutting and shaping of the stone blocks.
Which buildings are made of Tindalstone?
Oh, and they're all over. In fact, you know, I think you could justifiably say that Tindalstone is Canada's stone. For example, the Banff Springs Hotel, a magnificent hotel in Alberta, is partly made from Tindalstone. Likewise, the Parliament buildings in Ottawa, the Canada House, the diplomatic center of the Canadian government in England, Tindalstone. Of course, back in Manitoba, the magnificent Canadian Museum for Human Rights is clad in the exterior in Tindalstone. But I would arguably say that the most resplendent building is our legislature. You know, and I've met people who think that the legislative building here is made from solid Tindalstone. Well, unfortunately, this is incorrect. In fact, the inner core of the building is actually made of bricks. The bricks are made at Port La Prairie and at Rose Isle, Manitoba. But, you know, if anyone's interested in knowing what the legislative building is made from, there is an absolutely fascinating paper that was written back in 2005 by three geologists here in Manitoba, and they discussed the geology of the building. It goes into great detail about the various marbles and limestone and bricks. It's just a really fascinating read to learn how our legislative building was built.
There was some sort of scandal, though, wasn't there, surrounding construction of the building?
Oh, absolutely. You know, so the building began in 1913, and it was delayed by the outbreak of the First World War. But it was even more delayed by a scandal that broke out in January of 1915. Well, let's just say there were significant financial irregularities. There was quite a lot more money spent than they felt it should have cost, and an investigation subsequently terminated the contract that the provincial government had with the construction company. The fellow named Thomas Kelly, who was the lead in that construction company, he was investigated, he was subsequently charged, convicted. In fact, Mr. Kelly spent 2.5 years in Stony Mountain Penitentiary for his role. So, yeah, there was some serious financial wrongdoing that went on. And in fact, that scandal led not just to the fall of Mr. Kelly and his company, but the government itself. The government of Rodmond Roblin actually was put out of office by this scandal, and a new government went into power in mid-1915. So they basically halted all the work on the legislative buildings until they could set the record straight. And maybe as a part of that sort of putting things right, they installed a government representative at the quarry at Garson to oversee, I guess, on the behalf of the government. So whether or not that meant there was some sort of a financial impropriety at the quarry, I haven't been able to determine, but certainly there was worries. And so a fellow named Peter McKissick was installed at the quarry.
Did the controversy surrounding the legislative building carry over to the quarry?
Yeah, well, that was the suspicion. And in fact, what sort of borne out is that in June of 1916, the government started getting some bills from the quarry that it kind of was a little suspicious of. So they sent the deputy minister of public works out there, a fellow named Oxton. And in fact, he had used to work at the quarry, and he investigated, and he immediately fired Peter McKissick. And you think, well, what's going on there? Well, apparently what happened was that when he got there, he found that Peter McKissick was occupying what they described as a palatial summer home made of Tindalstone. It was surrounded by extensive gardens, and allegedly all of this was built on the public purse. You know, it had been designed by the government architect. It was built by the quarry workers, and the cost, yeah, apparently taxpayers were paying for it. So there was some real concern that maybe some of the graft and the corruption that had affected the work at the legislature had spilled over to the quarry, and unfortunately Mr. McKissick paid the price for it.
Was he guilty?
Well, he protested, and in fact, there were newspaper accounts that said, you know, you've got everything wrong, that I did nothing wrong, and if you just investigate, I'll be exonerated. Well, subsequently, they did investigate and very quietly kind of just let the matter drop. You know, I could find no formal indictment of Mr. McKissick, for example. He never got his job back, unfortunately, so maybe there was some wrongdoing on his part, but maybe it wasn't quite as malicious as they initially thought.
So where does abandonment come into this story?
Right. Well, it turns out the house that they built was actually built for the quarry superintendent. It was going to be his residence, and his residence was unfortunately short. So this whole scandal, the building of the house and then subsequently the scandal around it, came to a head in January of 1917, just over 6 months after the house was built. Basically, the entire mill, you know, the mill where they shaped all the stone, the entire mill was destroyed in a massive fire. And although the newspaper stories of the times contended that it would be rebuilt, Peter Lyle, I guess he, by that point, had lost interest in the facility. Maybe he was losing more money than he was wanting to. And so basically, he never did rebuild that quarry. The site was eventually taken back by the town of Garson for back taxes. They hadn't paid the taxes on the site. And they eventually sold it to the Jurafsky family. They operated on a much reduced level until 1973, when they sold it to the Gillis family. Now, the Gillises, they had established a quarry across the road from the Lyle quarry years before, and they eventually took over that one as well. So the site, in terms of abandonment, the quarry itself, the place where they would quarry the stone, is still there. It's filled with water. And then the mill was destroyed, but the house that was built in 1916, well, it seems to have survived the fire. If you go there today, it's not intact. Unfortunately, it's basically the four stone walls. Of course, being stone, they wouldn't have burned in the big fire. But for whatever reason, all the wooden parts are basically gone. The windows, the doors, the roof, the floors. It's just basically four walls of a one-story building with a basement and basically all gone.
What's the present condition of the Lyle quarry site?
Well, I was there a few weeks ago, and despite signs that said no trespassing, the water-filled quarry is a popular swimming hole. And the day I was there, there were quite a number of teens that were enjoying a nice refreshing plunge in the quarry. The house is there still. It's hidden from trees. And in fact, one of my friends who grew up in that area, he remembers swimming in the quarry. He does not remember a house. So what it basically means is that I think the memory of this building has been completely lost, this once grand house that was used for maybe a relatively short time and now stands abandoned.
Gordon, thank you so much for this.
You're welcome, Nadia.
And what's the clue for next week?
We're going to visit a building in Roblin that for many years produced the secret ingredient of French cuisine. But it was smelly, too.
Can't wait. Gordon, thank you so much.
We'll talk to you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many more